seen in them the capacity of being a prophet, of being the imam, because of their knowledge and their good actions. And that is why when they are chosen, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is giving them more. As I mentioned, like being infallible for receiving the revelation. And like giving them a kind of divine knowledge so that they are not going to make any mistakes. So in this case, we can divide hisma in two parts. Hisma, infallibility regarding the actions. Hisma regarding the knowledge.
Yes.
The prophets and the imams, they have both. Mm-hmm. As I mentioned, they have tried to their best to reach this level, and then Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is giving them more when they are chosen as the prophet and the imams. Now, what about us? For us, we can reach the infallibility related to the actions.
Yes.
That is why many people believe that we have in the history of Islam some people who have not committed any sin during their life, especially after the time they have reached puberty or bulugh. Or for example, we have about some great people, the children of the Imam of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam, like Hazrat Abbas, Lady Zainab salamullah alayha. The point that they are also ma'soom. But does it mean that they have the same level of ismah as Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam? No.
The difference... It's for the sughra, they say.
Somehow, yeah.
The minor
exactly.
Infallibility, that's right.
They may not commit any sin and they are infallible, mm-hmm. but when it comes to their knowledge, it doesn't mean that they are not going to make any mistakes when it comes to knowledge. That is only for the prophets and for the imams. And the same is true about some great scholars, some great urafa and mystics. We have some cases, it is of course claimed that, such and such a scholar, mystic, he did not commit any sin during his whole life. But does it mean that his level of isma is like the prophet, is like the imams? Of course not. So for any human being, there is a possibility for reaching isma.
I mean,
any person, if he doesn't commit anything, of course, this is very difficult.
Yes.
Very difficult. If he doesn't commit any minor sin, major sin, he has reached that type of isma. And then when it comes to isma in knowledge, this is not the case. This is only given by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to the prophets and the imams that they have a divine knowledge and they are not going to make any mistakes. But for
right.
us, fallible human beings, we can try our best not to commit any sin.
Mm-hmm.
If that happens, we are infallible in our actions. But does it mean that in all our decisions, we are not going to make any mistakes? No, this is not guaranteed for us fallible human
That's
beings.
Right.
But for the prophets, for the imams, this is guaranteed by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala because they are the leaders of the people and they are going to teach the people the religion.
That's all right. Thank you very much, Sheikh Karimi, for a nice elaboration regarding the concept of infallibility, whether it is possible for human beings to reach such a level or not. That's very kind of you. And thank you much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. See another episode. God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن علي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي حسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن علي وحسين
حسين وحسن. يوسف جلالي بتهران.
روباشافيت غازا.
جيروم هيوز بروسلز.
سعيد بورزا لندن.
رشا سغلام اسطنبول.
سيد امين اولمي كابول.
شاهان بات انديان ادمنستريد كشمير.
Around the world with reporters.
The health ministry in Gaza Strip says that the lives of hundreds of kidney failure patients are at risk due to lack of medicine and special chemicals needed for dialysis machines. Most kidney patients are hospitalized in the territory's biggest medical center, the Shifa Hospital. The hospital, just like other health facilities in Gaza, has been struggling with severe shortage of basic supplies for several years under the Israeli blockade. This has hit the patients with chronic diseases, including renal failure, the hardest, and children are no exception.
Kidney failure patients in Gaza Strip are amounting to 1,100. These patients, usually every one of them will make dialysis 3 times per week in different hospitals of Gaza Strip. Among those 1,100, we have 38 children. So without having those dialysis every week 3 times, they will certainly succumb to their life and they will die.
The lives of kidney failure patients depend on dialysis machines, but they usually malfunction due to overuse and lack of spare parts for repairs.
I need kidney dialysis 3 times a week, and I suffer from various illnesses. Dozens of medicines are nowhere to be found in Gaza's hospitals. The situation is very dangerous, and not having the treatment is a death sentence to kidney patients.
Death and suffering for Palestinians have always been what has come out of Israel's policy of keeping almost every necessity under scarcity in the Gaza Strip. And the health system has been no exception.
Today, this crisis is very acute now. I think this is the top urgent crisis we're facing in Gaza Strip today. And as you know, every now and then, the Israelis are still waving to attack Gaza once again. So the situation is very hard, complicated. And humanitarian issues, including health sector, should be avoided from all those punishment to the Palestinian people, because the patients will pay their lives.
What makes things worse for Palestinians is the fact that the international community remain apathetic to their plight.
Gazans have been facing difficulties in receiving medical care since 2007. The Ministry of Health blames the Israeli blockade for the endless suffering, especially among chronically ill patients. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
From breaking world records to bringing home gold medals for the first time.
Dream of elation for the Iranian nation. Nahid Kiani, world champion.
Iranian female athletes have been making their mark in the world, from team sports such as futsal and hockey to fencing and canoeing. For these young ladies, sky is the limit.
Over the past 2 years, the administration has worked hard to promote women's sports. That is why our sportswomen have been able to win over 1,300 medals in international tournaments, outnumbering the number of medals earned by male athletes.
Today, the number of female athletes in Iran is greater than that of males in the top 13 sports disciplines, including martial arts, particularly taekwondo, and also track and field, with a number of trailblazers making it possible for a new generation of Muslim girls to join in.
The presence of Iranian female athletes is not just significant in terms of their capabilities. More important than that is their presence on an international level promoting Islamic values. These young ladies are trailblazers that lead the way for sportswomen from other Muslim countries to take part in international events.
Words that were echoed by Iran's president in a meeting with athletes that will soon be off to Hangzhou, China, to take part in the 19th Asian Games.
I always emphasize that we should pay special attention to sports for all members of our society, particularly women. These young ladies are cultural ambassadors that demonstrate to the whole world that our values don't contradict a strong presence in sports events.
Over the past 2 years only, Iranian female athletes have been able to win more than 1,380 colorful medals in different fields, collecting bronze, silver, and gold medals and making Iranians proud.
And now with this amazing record, Iranian women athletes are off to China to make history in the Asian Games. Gisumish Ahmadi, Tehran.
Pakistan has been facing an acute energy crisis for many years. To overcome the energy needs of the country, a national energy conference was organized in Islamabad to explore ways to handle the energy supply deficiency. The conference was attended by energy experts, economists, traders, and political activists. The business community expressed its serious concerns over growing energy deficit in the country, demanding the government to defy the U.S. requests and move to import cheaper electricity and gas supplies from neighboring countries, especially Iran.
We have an abundant resource of energy next door, but due to international political pressures, we are unable to tap that resource, which will be good for our economy plus the economy of our neighbor.
Analysts say the energy crisis poses serious threats to Pakistan's fragile economy and national security environment, urging the government to further strengthen economic ties with Tehran.
Yes, the option is very nice, and we have no other chance other than to connect our all gas-fired power plant with the Iranian gas pipeline, and that is already terminated at the border.
Allah has blessed us with the abundant renewable resources. And if we decide that, okay, we have to go for it, okay, like our neighbors are doing it, okay, in only 5 years, okay, we can go for 100% renewable energy. It's not a big deal.
Meanwhile, talking to Press TV, Iran's ambassador to Pakistan reiterated that Tehran is ready to help Islamabad meet its energy needs. He said closer energy partnership between the two countries can strengthen their bilateral relations and promote regional stability.
We know that the Pakistani people are in dire need of energy, and we are ready to provide cheaper gas supplies to Pakistan.
Political activists say Pakistan's decision to import cheaper energy supplies from neighboring Iran would offer a promising avenue towards greater economic growth, energy security, and environmental sustainability.
Expanding energy trade with Iran will not only foster economic and diplomatic ties between Islamabad and Tehran, but will also help Pakistan to modernize its infrastructure and harness its energy potential more effectively. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
Honoring all those who anonymously helped the resistance front, prominent Iranian officials and international resistance scholars and activists, and a number of Hezbollah senior commanders attended the 8th edition of a conference dubbed Resistance Fighters Abroad to honor yet another influential figure for his lifelong commitment to the resistance front with their special Lifetime Achievement Award.
Today we can see how the resistance front is growing as a result of the hard work of people like Hojatul Islam wal Muslimin Sayyid Isa Tabatabai. As you probably know, he was born in Najaf and came to Iran as a teenager and continued his studies in Qom and then moved to Lebanon because he was facing oppression. After the victory of the Islamic Revolution, he was appointed as the representative of Imam Khomeini in Lebanon and later the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, leaving a great record behind.
The resistance front today is in a very good position. The Israeli regime has had to alter its plans and limit its moves because of the resistance front. We owe all of these achievements to resistance fighters and all of those who are assisting the resistance. In this context, we owe people like Haji Isa Tabatabai a lot.
The unveiling ceremony of his biography, along with the unveiling of a commemorative stamp, made this year's ceremony even more special.
I believe that every now and then in our region, we need to call out the names of those who have dedicated their lives to the resistance front out loud. This is the main purpose of the conference on resistance fighters abroad.
Traditionally, the annual conference is held on the martyrdom anniversary of the all-time role model of resistance fighters abroad, the 8th Shia Imam, Imam Reza alayhi salam, who was martyred far away from his homeland in the Iranian city of Mashhad, and ends on the martyrdom anniversary of Imam Hassan al-Askari alayhi salam, the 11th Shia Imam. The closing ceremony of the conference will be held next week on the 24th of September in the holy city of Mashhad, northeastern Iran. Kisumisha Ahmadi, Tehran.
Peace talks between Ansarullah and Saudi delegates are in progress in the Saudi kingdom's capital. In this round of negotiations, the focus is on finding ways to alleviate the humanitarian crisis caused by the Saudi-led war in Yemen. The head of the Ansarullah national delegation team, Muhammad Abdesalam, believes if talks are successful, it could lead to an ultimate political solution.
No doubt we will discuss the payment of salaries to Yemeni employees, opening the airports and seaports, prisoner exchange, the withdrawal of all foreign military forces, and rebuilding Yemen, which could lead to a political solution.
One of the main topics to be discussed is the presence of foreign military personnel scattered throughout areas controlled by the Saudi-led coalition. In recent years, the Yemeni islands have been transformed into military bases and airfields operated by the UAE and Western military forces.
There can be no peace until foreign military troops withdraw from Yemeni islands and withdraw forces from the provinces of Hadhramaut, Ma'rib, and Shabwa. If the occupation does not end, there will never be peace.
Even if peace talks succeed in ending the humanitarian crisis in Yemen, will it be enough to end the war if foreign forces remain in the country?
The Ansarullah delegation has made it very clear. Foreign military troops must leave the entire Yemeni land. And if this is something that is not accomplished through peaceful negotiations, the Ansarullah-backed government will continue to fight. Yusuf Mawdi, Sana'a.
Sick Palestinian children in the Gaza Strip continue to suffer due to Israel's illegal and inhumane practices. According to a report released on Wednesday by the UK-based organization Save the Children, the Israeli regime has deprived some 400 Palestinian children in Gaza of vital medical care in the first half of 2023. Gazans, including patients, must obtain special permits to leave the territory through an Israeli-controlled crossing. Human rights groups have raised the alarm over Israel's violation of international laws by depriving Gazans of their freedom of movement.
Israel continues to violate international laws and norms by denying patients and their companions the necessary permits to travel outside Gaza. Israel is endangering the lives of those sick children by depriving them of urgent medical care.
Hospitals in the Gaza Strip lack many essential drugs needed for treating patients suffering from severe illnesses. Last year, three Gazan children died while waiting for their exit permits. Press TV met with the Zidane family in the southern Gaza Strip town of Khan Yunis. Israel has repeatedly denied them an exit permit.
My son is very sick and needs urgent medical care outside Gaza. He's 15 months old and only weighs 5 kilograms. There's no medical treatment for him in Gaza, and Israel refuses to grant us exit permits. I call on the whole world to save my son.
Getting an Israeli permit to access the health care needed outside the impoverished Gaza can be a stressful and unpredictable process. Nearly 1,100 patients have died in the territory because of the Israeli blockade in the past 16 years.
There is no secret about the procedures which have been implemented against the Palestinian besieged Gaza Strip over the past 16 years, and especially over the past year, in which the Israeli authorities have denied entry to many hundreds of Palestinian children from getting medical treatment in the West Bank and East Jerusalem hospitals. And that is consistent with the Israeli apartheid regime.
The health sector in Gaza has been grappling with acute shortage of medicines due to the Israeli blockade in place since 2007. Tel Aviv's blockade has taken its toll on the health and the well-being of people in the Gaza Strip. Hundreds of Palestinian patients, including children, have already lost their lives due to Israel's inhumane practices. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
Leader of the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, Kim Jong-un, traveled to Russia this week for a tour and summit with Russian President Vladimir Putin. The DPRK's Kim visited a cosmodrome as he hopes to develop satellite technology.
I am honored that President Putin has shown a deep interest, provided an opportunity to engage in a conference at a space launch facility, and given us a chance to gain deeper understanding of the current and future of a space power nation.
The DPRK leader also toured a jet fighter facility as Russia and the DPRK deepen their relations. Warnings from the U.S. against DPRK-Russia cooperation continued, this time from officials planning extended deterrence with their South Korean counterparts.
In the context of mounting DPRK threats to regional stability, the United States will continue its efforts to counter any and all threats to the U.S.-ROK alliance.
The U.S. strategy of extended deterrence refers to the so-called nuclear umbrella, the U.S. commitment to use all of its forces, including nuclear weapons, in defense of an ally, in this case, South Korea. South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol has sought to strengthen that commitment with the routine deployment here of U.S. nuclear-capable weapons. Experts in Seoul, however, feel that the deployment of more U.S. weapons causes the DPRK only to invest further in its own military deterrence.
These actions by South Korea, the United States, and Japan are not contributing to eliminating the DPRK's nuclear weapons, but bringing the DPRK, China, and Russia closer and militarily strengthening the country. So the attempted deterrence of the DPRK's nuclear program is actually causing its nuclear program and missiles to be strengthened.
Earlier this week, South Korea announced its intention to purchase 25 more U.S. F-35 Joint Strike Fighter jets. Frank Smith, Seoul.
It all started with smiles and warm applause as Ursula von der Leyen began delivering her annual State of the Union speech in the European Parliament on Wednesday. The head of the EU's executive arm, the European Commission, painted a rosy picture.
Together, we have shown that when Europe is bold and united, it gets things done.
The atmosphere in the chamber soon changed.
À l'appel de l'histoire.
It's time to come down from the ivory tower. One third in the EU, millions, don't have enough to eat because of inflation. You didn't say a single word about them today.
One lawmaker even questioned how von der Leyen can sleep at night.
95 million people in the EU are threatened by poverty. There is a broken energy market while the energy and arms industries are making record profits.
The Commission President was told the so-called working poor are being ignored. Experts confirm it is a growing phenomenon in the EU.
People can be homeless and have a job. There's in-work homelessness, but there's also groups that are higher risk of losing their job from one day to the next.
Von der Leyen told lawmakers she's proposing 50 billion euro for Ukraine from the EU budget up to 2027. This is in addition to the huge amounts of money being spent on Ukraine by individual member states, most of whom are in NATO, where military spending is also increasing. Not to mention the EU is developing its own army. A number of legislators criticised the EU's position with regards to Russia.
The failed sanctions policy, sorry to say, that hasn't really helped Ukraine in any meaningful way. It hasn't brought the end of the war any closer, but it's hurting the European economy and European people.
Slovakian MEP Miroslav Radatovsky claimed the real purpose behind the war in Ukraine is for the United States to occupy Europe and the world. Separately, a number of lawmakers criticised how refugees are treated by the EU if they are not from Ukraine. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Bilmiyorum.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked and...
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of...
Self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, Assalamu Alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page, we're welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Farahzad. Stay tuned.
الان متاسفانه یه مشکل همینه که حالا یک کسی یه خطای لغزشی در عملی.
One big problem of the societies today is reacceptance of the repentant to the community. If a person is truly regretful about his past deeds, we as Muslims must welcome him or her with good behavior and kind language. Of course, having foul language is a great sin. But if a person regrets his bad words, we must forgive him, since Allah has forgiven him.
آثار خیلی شومی داره این بدزبانی. اونه که خدا نکنه انسان عادت کنه تو.
There are many negative effects mentioned for having bad or foul language. If a person dies while having good words in his mouth, he or she will find salvation in the other world. Now, when we are alive, we can practice good language. Our worship is complete when we correct our words and use good words when interacting with others. All our deeds, from words to actions, are recorded, and even the smallest words can have huge positive or negative effects in our life. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Farahzad. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
Join us in this journey. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Press TV, which announced its arrival around 16 years ago as a counterweight to Western propagandist media to demolish its flawed narratives and grossly unfair coverage of Iran and the region, has to a great extent been successful. Now Australia, which has a deeply flawed human rights record, has already slapped three packages of sanctions against Iran since December 2022. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Press TV wrote, draconian laws barring the right to peaceful protest, Guantanamo-style abuse of child prisoners, discrimination against First Nations peoples, horrendous abuse of asylum seekers. Still, Australia has the audacity to pour scorn on Iran's human rights record and impose financial sanctions and travel bans on individuals and entities under the smokescreen of human rights. Recently, Anthony Albanese government in Australia imposed targeted financial sanctions and travel bans on four Iranian individuals and three entities, accusing them of oppression of people in Iran, including women and girls. Australia has already slapped three packages of sanctions against Iran since December 2022, but this is the first time it imposed targeted financial sanctions and travel bans under the so-called Iran Autonomous Sanctions Framework. Under the new package, those designated include a spokesman for Iran's law enforcement forces, Iran's cyber police, and Press TV, the Islamic Republic's leading international media network. Press TV is no stranger to sanctions and other heavy-handed measures aimed at muzzling free speech and media freedom. The network and its office bearers have faced a blizzard of sanctions since last year on various flimsy pretexts. In November 2022, U.S. Treasury's Office of Foreign Assets Control, OFAC, imposed sanctions on the network and its parent organization, IRIB, on the baseless pretext of forced confessions of Iranian dual national and international detainees. The same month, the European Union also quite hysterically jumped the bandwagon and imposed a slew of sanctions on Iranian individuals and entities, including Press TV, with the same ruse: forced confessions of detainees that is actually baseless. In December last year, European satellite operator Eutelsat also called on broadcasters to stop airing Press TV over alleged and baseless forced confessions. Press TV, which announced its arrival around 16 years ago as a counterweight to Western propagandist media to demolish its flawed narratives and grossly unfair coverage of Iran and the region, has to a great extent been successful. The network has over the years spoken not only for the Islamic Republic of Iran, which has been at the forefront of the global fight against Western hegemony, but has also told the untold stories of those who have been consigned to oblivion. That is the primary function of free, independent, and vibrant media: to uphold the truth, prevent the manipulation of facts, unmask the hegemons, and speak for the oppressed, weak, and vulnerable. It has been a thorny path, though. Press TV has faced a barrage of sanctions. It has been taken off from satellites. Its social media pages have been suspended or deleted. Its web domains have been seized, and its office bearers have been slapped with financial sanctions and travel bans. No one has spoken in its defense, not even those Western free speech advocates who are never tired of harping about the role of media as the purveyor of truth, disseminator of information, custodian of people's interests, and the forum of political debate. Now, Australia has also joined this notorious league, the country with a deeply flawed human rights record, known for Guantanamo-style abuse of child prisoners. The list of rights abuses in Australia is too long and widely documented. Barely a few months ago, there was news about a 13-year-old Indigenous Australian boy who spent 45 days in solitary confinement on trivial offences. In April, a new damning study by the Immigrant Service at the Royal Children's Hospital, Melbourne, revealed that children held in Australia's immigration detention centres in the past decade have reported alarmingly high rates of mental health problems. In November last year, the UN blasted the Australian government for lack of cooperation and open breach of human rights obligations after a team of UN inspectors had to cancel a tour of detention centres where abuse and death of Aboriginals had previously been reported. These are just a few isolated cases that bear powerful testimony to how the Australian authorities have over the years abused human rights with impunity and gotten away with it. Only on rare occasions has it been reprimanded, like in January 2021, when more than 30 countries at the UN Human Rights Session blasted the country over its horrendous border policies and child detentions that breach international law. The issue of offshore processing of refugees and asylum seekers in particular has been indicative of Australia's lack of compliance with international humanitarian law. The policy has harmed tens of thousands of vulnerable asylum seekers, with many committing suicides at infamous processing camps in Nauru and Papua New Guinea. Taking all this into consideration, Australia has no moral high ground to lecture Iran on human rights and to impose sanctions on a news network that speaks for those harmed by Western regimes.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim. I am a Muslim.
Islamite.
Islamite.
Allah my Lord.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
His word Quran.
Muhammad.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners from all around the world. This is IRIB English Radio, and we're here again at U Station. I am Bita.
And I'm your host, Zainab.
Assalamu alaikum, dear sister.
Assalamu alaikum to you too and your listeners.
And I'm really happy to be here again. And I enjoy every moment of being in U Station with you, with other sisters, which is a blessing for me.
Same here, because she's so charismatic, personality.
Thank you. In this episode specifically, we're going to talk about something which is a bit dark and sad, I think. But it happens to everybody, you know. Right. When you leave, and when you read your story of the past, you feel like there are some regrets in your life. There are things that you wanted to do,
so
but
many.
You didn't.
So many. So,
you know, it's not so many for me. Maybe because, you know, I didn't leave that much.
Wow.
To have a lot of regrets. But it's not so many for me. But there are. There are some, maybe, for the things that I wanted to do, but I didn't. And the things that I did, but I didn't want to do, you know.
All right. Life is all about experiencing different things.
Exactly. So. You know, and this word itself, regret, I mean, is so painful, isn't it?
I understand. So let's talk about your regrets. What's your
biggest
regret?
Why are we starting with me?
Listen, I don't have many. See, yeah. I have a big list. You don't have many.
Look at
so let's start with you.
I think the most, you know, regret that, the most important regret that I went through was just wasting my time with people, with persons that just, they ruined my personality.
They were not worth off.
Exactly. They just, I don't know, how can I
elaborate? It's okay, don't
cry. You know, I'm just emotional and so on because I'm not a really emotional person. But in this situation, you cannot do anything about the time that you lost,
right.
You know, unfortunately.
Right.
The only thing that you can do for your regret is just understanding the lesson you've learned
right.
from these regrets and then just try not to do it again.
Right, again. And you should be thankful to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that He showed you the mirror. So that in the future, you can choose people very cautiously,
yeah.
very carefully. You're yet too young, and you have learned this lesson. This is so, so, so good. Like, when I was of your age, and I still hang up with people. I mess up with people, then I find at the end of the day, they were of no use. I was wasting my time. So I know that happens. But I'm happy that you have realized that. As young as, like, you're not even in your 20s.
Yeah, it is for sure one of the blessings that I'm blessed with
right.
from Allah Almighty, which I'm really thankful.
Right.
So let's keep your regrets, because there are so many regrets that you have. Then we're going to go for a short break. Stay tuned.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
This is Youth Station, by the way, and we were talking about regrets. So tell us about your own personal regrets in your life.
Oh my God. I think I was giving so much time to my friends at the expense of my family. Like, I remember my mother would call me off on the dinner table, and I would still be talking on phone with my friends in another room, sharing the notes, giving them importance more than my family.
Yeah.
And then, you know, like, I wish, because I don't have those friends around me today.
Yeah.
Like the regret you said, like, you know, you wasted your time for the people
exactly.
who were not worth of. So I think the time my mother used to call me on the dinner table, let's have dinner together,
and
the entire
it.
Family was waiting, and I would give importance. I'm sharing the notes. I'm helping the person. I just wanted to be the helping person on this earth.
And they just didn't appreciate it.
Yeah, I really was not expecting someone to appreciate it or not. But yeah, like I remember, like I just recently lost my father, so I do regret this thing that I wish I gave that time. They were calling me to sit with them rather than I gave importance to those people, and they were not even available for the condolences. Right, well, the time I lost him, so this is a big regret. You know, sometimes you give time to the people at the expense of your family. Who are really not worth of that time.
Exactly.
Let's get back to your regrets.
First of all, I think we've experienced this situation, all of us, that we spent time for people that they didn't deserve it, that we missed, you know, some more important people for the people that were, you know, were kind of less important in our life.
Right.
And it was this tweet on the Twitter that it was like asked people, what is your biggest regret in life?
Okay.
And I'm going to just read some of them for you, which is really interesting for me. Not being with mom at the end. She died 2 hours after I left her.
Oh.
Not calling my dad the night before he suffered a fatal heart attack just because I had only...
Same here.
Yeah. Really, I'm really sorry, really, because it's a kind of really sad regret, because you cannot do anything, you cannot make it better.
Irreplaceable.
Exactly.
Loss.
My cousin rang me on Christmas Eve, and I really rushed the convo because I was cooking. She killed herself.
Oh.
Not staying with my mom to the very end. And as you see, this is kind of a common thing.
They are all kind of saying the same thing, not at the expense of family.
Exactly.
You know, sometimes at the expense of family, we give importance to so many nonsense stuff or so many nonsense people in our life that we have regrets in the later in our life. Nobody loves you as sincerely as your parents do.
You know, if it was like 2 years ago, I would disagree. I would just... tell you that no, it's not like that. There may be some people like that, they love you more than your family, they appreciate you more than your family, but at this moment I truly believe that nothing, no one is more important than your own family, because they are always there for you no matter what you do.
Sincere. That's a sincere law. Like someone taught me a very big lesson, a very very big lesson. I'm elder to you, I think more than 10 years. This person tells me, you have to pay for the consequences later in your life.
Yeah.
And then when I was thinking deeper and deeper on this, this was true somewhere. Like,
for sure.
I really could analyze the things that person was trying to convey me. If someone ever tells you that I'll take your bag or I'll pick you, know that it's not without expense. That I really learned from this person, and that really is.
You know, nothing is for free, and you know, the price that we are paying for the knowledge that we are seeking in our life is exactly the sadness, is the sorrow that we feel in our soul.
Let's go for a short break.
Station here at your service.
Let's talk about a regret where you could be a fighter. I mean, I have one of the regrets when people would bully me and I was not able to respond. Today I feel like I wish I'd go back and I could break there.
It is always like that. When you're at the moment, you cannot tell that person anything. You are just kind of speechless and, you know.
But you actually strengthen those people to bully other people.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And but when you think about these kind of things after, maybe even 2 days after, you feel like, oh, I wish I would say that. Oh, I wish I would do this. And, you know, it feels like kind of sad.
Okay.
But, yeah, I don't have this kind of regret because, you know, my tone is a bit harsh.
Wow.
You know, I would bully that person if I feel like I'm bullied.
So let's talk about, again, Vita's regrets.
It's not like I regret anything, because a regret is when you realize you could
look
do something
at her
else.
And then she's always telling me that she's a kind person. Look at her personality. All right.
Come
go ahead.
You know, because you did it, you cannot do anything about it. You have to learn lessons. You cannot be regretful for all of your lifetime. You know, your lifetime here is limited, and you have to do something for your afterlife. If you're
right.
going to be always regretful about the bad things you did, then you know, when you want to start doing something better, when you want to have your upgraded form. Okay, so regrets can be instructive, but you have to be really, really attentive. It can be destructive too in many ways.
It can be.
It may depress you. It may make you feel like you are useless. You cannot change your world, your life. It's not like that. There is always hope for a better life. There is always hope for being forgiven by Allah Almighty.
Right.
And these are the factors that help me in order not to just feel like regretful.
Right.
And this is why I tell you that there is not so much regret in my life. And
that's nice. I am so happy. Like, she's so young and she's like that. Things like that. But
I think
one of the things that most of the women have the regret when they grow older, or I would say most of the people, is that worrying about what others thought about them.
Yeah, exactly.
So much. Like, women are like so much thinking
they
about this.
They overthink it.
Most of us place way too much importance on what other people around us think of us. Like, how will they judge us? What I'm putting on, what they think about the color I'm putting on, what they think about the dress I'm putting on.
Yeah, which is annoying.
This is like, I mean, in the moment we think their opinions are crucial for like my growth, for my success, for my this and that, for like I cannot move ahead if I don't have their opinions. But you know, on our deathbeds, none of that matters.
Exactly.
None of that matters. So it's like, I think this is one of the things that I think this regret every woman does have when she enters, like, you know, like when she crosses her 20s. They do have this regret. Why I give importance to stupid things that I have, that I should not have been giving to, like, what others think of me.
Yeah, you should, I think, have these kind of, keep the balance here. Like, when you're so regretful, or when you want it to be the motivation to do something, and when you think about other people so much, what do they think, what do they want, what do they, I don't know.
That's sort of also things. Because of lack of confidence.
Exactly,
know?
I wanted to mention that.
We love concerns of others to weigh so heavy on us, instead of like trusting our own beliefs, our own thoughts, our own you know, whatever, our own desires. We always think about what people think about us, what are their opinions. That's more important to us,
you know. When
it should not happen.
Exactly.
It's because of that lack of confidence.
Yeah.
I think if we work on developing confidence at a very early age, we won't be that much, you know, affected by what others think about us.
Yeah. You know, when you're seeking for the satisfaction with for other people, it will happen that you feel like you lack self-confidence, you feel like you're not enough, you regret doing this and doing that and so on. But at this part, I think we have to wrap all the things that we mentioned up to here up. And as you know, we started with our own regrets and our own personal experiences in life, which everybody has their own regrets in their lives. But it doesn't mean that they have to be sorrowful for the rest of their life, or they cannot do anything. There is always hope for you, for us, for every each of us, because there is the kindest God there for you, okay? We talked about this point that there are many reasons that we care way too much about other people,
right,
that we may feel like regretful always. And the underlying reason here is this lack of self-confidence that we talked about.
Right.
If you know yourself more, if you respect yourself more, if you try to boost your self-esteem, then you're not going to face this kind of being regretful anymore. And the last thing I want to add up here is that when you are trying to just take steps in a way to be more like Allah Almighty,
right,
then it's all, you know, you are going through the right way. So there is no way that you doubt your way. And keep going.
Right.
Don't be regretful.
In the end, I think the biggest regret we should have,
yeah,
should be only towards the hereafter. Like, I wish in my life I knew this. I knew these narrations before. I wish I could have done in the way of life way before than I'm doing right now. But it's never like too late. Allah
exactly.
is always, he's always kind. He's always forgiving. So we should always have hope in him. And about the people of this life, we should always be learning from our regrets.
Yes,
not just keeping the regrets and then keeping yourself depressed. We should be learning from them. And if we have regrets related to here after, then it's okay.
Thank you for listening to us, dear listeners. Thank you, dear sister, for being here with me again. And I bid you farewell. Assalamu alaikum
wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
President Raisi says Iranians will not give in to U.S. sanctions.
adding that Washington's so-called maximum pressure campaign against Tehran has failed. Iraq is pledging not to allow any threat from its Kurdistan region to Iran after announcing relocation of Kurdish armed groups away from joint borders.